Hello and welcome to the LRM podcast, sponsored by Adrian Flux Insurance. I'm Martin Dominey.
And I'm Steve Miller.
And you join us for an hour of chat about Land Rovers and everything to do with owning them.
Well, you seem bloody happy today.
I'm quite upbeat, Stevie.
Is it because you had a long weekend?
Yes, I did. I had a lovely 4 days off. 4 days away from my computer. It was absolutely glorious.
I'm glad you had 4 days off because you were right misery last week.
I'd just run out. It's a lot to keep on top of. People don't realise there's a lot of plates to spin doing this job. It's good fun, but there's just a lot of it all the time.
I'm sure most people think we just drive our Land Rovers all day, every day. It's just like pottering about.
Yeah.
It's not like that in the real world.
There's great bits about doing this, and I love it, and I'm so privileged to be able to edit a Land Rover magazine, having read them for so many years growing up, and I do genuinely feel honoured to be where I am, but my God, there's just no stopping, is there? It's just hardcore.
Definitely. No, it's scary.
Yeah. But anyway, enough of
that. Anyway, that started positive. Now we're like, that's
no,
like
it was still positive, because on Friday night, I went and tried my roof tent out for the first time.
Yeah, I noticed you're no longer a rooftop tent virgin.
Indeed.
How was it for you?
It was a bit awkward and fiddly, as most first times are. But no, it was actually...
Did you get it up all right? This is taking a turn, isn't it?
There was
we can always edit this bit out if it's not good enough.
You know that's not happening.
Yeah, no.
The erection was excellent.
Don't tell me it stayed up all night.
Listen, Stevie, that's enough. Quite enough for this. It's a family podcast.
Oh yes.
It was really
good.
We are
good. Talking about your tent.
We are, of course, talking about my Vickiewood small willow 140, which I've not had that long. Put it on the roof rack, the front runner roof rack on the Freelander 2. I've been driving around with it. Finally got the opportunity to go camping on Friday night. Just booked a local site. My mate Mike came in his Discovery 3. He drove out there sort of Friday afternoon and got pitched up, had a little fire pit going, a few nice cold beverages.
Nice.
Put the world to rights, got some dinner. It was a cracking night. And rooftop.
You've been quite sceptical about this, haven't you?
I have been very sceptical about it. And I have obviously not been putting off getting one, but it's taken me longer to get one than a lot of other people who are into Land Rovers.
Yes. And they're not for everybody. We've discussed this like probably last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
So I'm glad to see you out of your cock tent, because I didn't realise you'd done that like 10 years.
Yeah, I got given that. Neil Watterson gave me that when I first started at LRO because I didn't have a suitable tent to go off and do.
And you've used it ever since?
Honestly, it's the only tent I've had since.
Yeah, that's a proper tent.
Yeah, it's done a lot. If I want to just chuck something in the car and go, and you know, if my wife's in the Freelander or whatever, I'll still use it. But this roof tent, it's a soft shell, so it opens up like a clamshell style, same as your front runner one.
Similar design, really.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I do want to adjust the cover because you can choose which side the cover hinges, and I want to adjust it so it hinges at the front. So because at the moment you're stretching across the windscreen to unzip the cover, if you see what I mean.
Just turn it around then.
Yeah, so you can do that. So that's one job I want to do. But the actual operation of it and setting it up and taking it down, not nearly as much of a kerfuffle as I thought it would be. And my word, it's comfy.
This is the thing. And one of the things I don't dislike about ground tent camping is that damp that you get. And you get the cold off the ground, the rising damp and the cold air and everything else. But in a roof tent, everything is drier.
Yes.
And fresher.
We were, considering how much it rained Friday during the day, we were really lucky with the weather. Cloudless blue sky. It was really warm in the morning. But being able to wake up, I was just, obviously having had the cot tent, which is supposedly the XL model, so it's enough for one person and their kit. Realistically, you can get yourself and like a rucksack in there, and even then you find yourself touching the sides of the tent, you know, and you get condensation.
Yeah, it's horrible.
This thing is enormous in comparison. It's got a big LED strip light across the middle, which lights the whole thing up as soon as it gets dark.
You got that wired into the mains?
No, it's on a rechargeable power pack.
Okay. Did that come into tent?
Yeah, I think they're standard.
Yeah, that's really cool. We have one that we just put in with batteries, and you need a light.
So it's got, yeah, really impressed with that. And of course, you can charge your phone overnight as well off the same power pack.
Yeah.
Yeah, just so spacious. I can lie, I'm probably a shade over 6 foot, and I can lie out completely flat, and my toes don't even get close to the end.
Brilliant. Yeah.
I had my bag, I had my like my wash kit and a coat and some other stuff in there. And yeah, just so much space. Obviously, the idea is myself and my wife will sleep in there and we go for weekends away, so we won't be storing all our kit in there. But yeah, I'm super impressed. And I actually felt like a proper Instagrammer, because in the morning,
wow.
I unzipped the front of it.
You've influencing people to buy a tent in a minute.
Listen, I unzipped the front of it in the morning, and you know, like those shots people do of like, look, they're in the tent, but they're looking out at the view.
So you have a bit of the tent in the picture, like framing it.
And yeah, then, in the foreground and then out across. I mean, it was a fairly...
Did you get your feet in it?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, no, you have to. Yeah,
I didn't actually take a picture. What I thought to myself, this would make a great Instagram picture, but I was too busy shouting at my friend Mike, who was in his ground tent. I said, "Good morning, peasant."
Looking down at people. Yeah,
we had a right old laugh. But no, I'm super impressed with it, and I'm really glad I did actually finally go and get one.
One thing I noticed about, I've probably touched on this already, but when you're in a roof tent, we take them for granted, being in and around Land Rovers and going to Land Rover shows. You see them everywhere.
Yeah.
If you go to a conventional campsite in the UK, not many people have actually looked around them.
Which is quite
like
surprising.
Caravan people and motorhome people, they go, wow, that's amazing.
I suppose the majority really of the time, people see them on cars driving on the road.
Mm,
you do see a lot of... One thing is the most commonly seen roof tent that you see driving around on normal cars is Tent Box, isn't it? The brand, they've smashed the marketing, to be fair. And whenever someone asks me, they go, "Oh, is that a Tent Box?" I go, "Well, actually, no, it's a Vicky Wood Small Willow 140. But they assume that all roof tents are called Tent Boxes.
Yeah, it's great marketing.
Yeah. But no, that was a really good...
So that was Friday. Yeah. When's your next camping trip then?
Soon, I hope. I want to get some more in before the weather turns. But no, I really, really enjoyed that. Good run out. My mate Mike, like I say, came in his Discovery 3. Yeah, had a lovely time, really. A few beers, put the world to rights. Just nice being outside, staring at the fire till bedtime. It's just like, just takes your mind off everything else.
Yeah. How's your oil leak?
Significant.
Good.
It's not good, actually, not Steve. Right, so that's another thing I went to do on... One of my days off was I thought I must change the cam belt on the 110's engine.
Oh, I thought you were going to just leave it to die.
No, I thought I can't, because if I went up to, like, we went to York Land Rover show, I thought if it snaps miles and miles from home, that would be a bit stupid to just ignore it and let it break. And I thought, it's been off the road 10 years. A cam belt kit isn't horrendous money.
I think it's, yeah, I think you should be...
It's preventative maintenance.
Yeah, you should put one on.
However, I went to do the cam belt. No, I didn't go to do the cam belt. I couldn't ignore the oil leak, which has got worse. It's got a really bad oil leak from the back of the engine. So, much to the chagrin of a lot of people on Instagram, I went to Halfords and bought a can of that stop leak stuff.
Wow.
And I thought, well, I've always wondered if it works. Might be worth a go. Chuck that in.
Has to be good stuff to stop that leaking.
Well, exactly.
Has it stopped it?
No.
No.
So,
so, top tip, don't try and bodge things up.
What I would say is, I can understand the logic of that stop leak stuff. There's a lot of different brands that sell it. And there's a cracking video on YouTube on a channel called Project Farm. And he tests loads of different tools and additives and oils and all sorts of stuff. So... if you want to know how that additive stuff works, check his videos out. They're really, really good. Anyway, I came back from a drive out in the 110 and I chucked a bit of white wood. I've got like old wardrobe panels in the garage. I thought I'd chuck one of them under there and see how much oil came out.
And where?
Yeah, because being...
Well, it tracks down, doesn't it?
Exactly. Being gravel, my driveway, you know, it soaks up a lot of oil. But I thought, I need to see how much is coming out. The answer is a lot.
Okay.
I've already resealed the sump on that engine because that was leaking. But this is from the flywheel housing or the rear main oil seal, which is an engine out job.
Yes.
And I thought to myself, if I pull this engine out...
You can't put it back in.
Do I really want to refit it?
No.
The answer to that question, Steve, is no.
Okay, here
so
we go.
So I've been talking to... Dan at Demand has shown an interest in my 11J that I bought off Richard Hall at Norfolk Garage, because he needs an engine for...
The spare one, yeah.
For one, yeah. That, okay. So the idea was initially I was going to refit that, and then eventually I was going to turbocharge it, because I've got all the 19J bits from Richard as well. I'm not sure I'm going to be happy with the outcome of that. So,
okay,
in this unprecedented turn of events, you don't know about this yet, I have actually bought a TDI.
Have you?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
So.
Thank goodness for that. I've seen the light.
I mean.
300 TDI?
200.
What, proper?
The correct engine.
Okay.
Not a Defender engine. It's a Discovery engine, unfortunately. I really wanted a Defender engine, but they're just so expensive.
I didn't know you'd done this.
So, not only have I bought a 200 TDI engine, I've also bought a Stumpy R380 gearbox.
So that let me get this right, that puts everything in the right place.
It bolts straight in.
Bolts straight in, doesn't it?
So you've got the stronger gearbox.
Yeah.
You've got God's own engine, the 200 TDI, and a higher ratio transfer box.
That came with the kit?
Yep, the whole lot. Rad pack, hoses, mounts, gear selector, the whole shebang. And that's what I'll be doing over winter.
Thank God for that.
Because it's come to my attention. Because every time I drive that 110...
You like it?
I really like driving it.
No, when we went along in it the other couple of weeks ago, brilliant thing.
I just, I think to myself, because I've got a friend who's...
So that's the keeper now, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got to be now. Now that I've invested that money.
Yes.
It can't go anywhere. So eventually...
Is Dan buying your engine then?
He's buying the spare one, yeah.
Brilliant.
And then I'll sell the...
You do love collecting engines and wheels and tyres.
Yeah, I do. The XCLs are starting to get in the way a bit now in the garage. They might have to graduate to the unit.
I was going to say, if only there was a designated Facebook page for Mitchell and XCLs.
There is. The following on from a podcast, would have been not last week before, talking about workshops and garages and things like that.
I'm not allowed to talk about tyres.
No, we're not.
Oh, okay.
We'll nip that in the bud. Colin will be very upset. This obviously puts my plans for a workshop on the back foot yet again, because I've invested most of my garage savings in converting.
Last time we were talking, or a couple of times ago, we were talking about workshop builds.
I still need to do it, but...
You do? You'll remind yourself, because you're doing this TDI conversion over winter.
Yeah.
May I suggest you do it... Oh, hang on.
No, what I'm going to do...
No, because that might impede on your helping me.
No, it won't.
Okay, good.
I've thought about this. What I'm going to do is I'm going to roll the 110 up to the front of my current garage, which isn't tall enough to get a Land Rover in, pull the old engine out, because the engine crane will roll on the on the floor. So I'm going to get it as close as I can to the roof, just almost touching the windscreen, pull the old engine out, push the car back outside, work on the engine until it's ready to go in, and then do the same thing to refit it. So I'm not fussed how long it takes. It's not like I need that Land Rover.
I don't think that'll take too long, will it, for you?
Well, the other bonus to this engine is it's come out of an early... It's actually come out of a 90, but it will bolt, you know, everything. All the conversion stuff is there already. The downpipe is there.
So you'll put a new clutch in it, I presume?
Yeah, I'll fit a new clutch.
Yeah, do all that good stuff. Yeah.
But, yeah.
Head gasket, would you do that?
No, I don't think so. Not unless it's got telltale signs of needing doing. You can do a head gasket in situ without much hassle. So
cam belt, P gasket.
I'll do the cam belt and the P gasket.
Yeah, so all of that good stuff. Say that shouldn't take you too long.
I don't think
a couple of weekends?
Probably. And even if it does take a little while, I'm not like desperate. Yeah, so
what about the mounts? They go straight on?
Yeah.
So you haven't even got to do that.
So the no, I haven't got to cut the engine mounts about at all. This is why I really
want it. It's kind of nice, say, if anyone thinks, oh, I wish I had a 12J.
Yeah. This is why I really, really wanted a 200.
Yeah.
Because A, you haven't got to chop the chassis about, and B, it's a better engine, in my opinion, than the 300, only because of a few small things. But what had occurred to me is it's quite funny. I've got a 200 TDI engine with a later R380 gearbox. You've got a 300 TDI engine with an LT77 gearbox. So they're like opposites.
I know. And if I could wind the clock back, I probably wouldn't have used an LT77.
There's nothing wrong with them.
No, they're all right. Mine's been rebuilt by Ashcroft's. So I don't think it's... Yeah, I'm just used
to... Do you know what I mean? It's like,
I'm used to an R380.
I quite like how the LT77 changes. I think it's quite a nice, classic-feeling gearbox.
Yeah.
Whereas the R380 does feel quite a lot more modern.
Yeah, definitely. So I haven't used an LT77 for, well, since that was came off the road 25 years ago.
No, they are
good. It's all right, though. There's nothing really wrong with it. I just had it rebuilt just for the sake of it, really.
There's no difference in power between the 300 and the 200, so it won't be any bigger, if you know what I mean. So,
thank goodness for that. I'm glad you've done that.
That'll be... Yeah. My bank account isn't, but that'll be arriving on a pallet at some point this week, hopefully.
Are you getting it delivered?
Mm-hmm. Included in the price. We're not... I'm not telling you how much it costs because you'll laugh.
Okay.
TDIs are not cheap now.
Well, no, I know. And quite often is the case. I mean, if people want a 300 TDIs, look out for a beaten up old Discovery.
Yeah.
Because more often than not, the engines are absolutely fine.
Yeah.
But then you have to mess around with conversion parts.
Yes.
Which makes it a bit more complex.
That's really what sold it to me, as well as the fact that the shorty or stumpy R380, which is... For those not in the who may not know that terminology, it's essentially dimensionally exactly the same as an LT77, so a standard gearbox on right up to 300 TDI era. It bolts into that exact same mount. You don't need to change the tunnel or anything like that. It's literally like for like, and it came about apparently through the military contracts. When the gearboxes failed on military Land Rovers, they stopped making the LT77, so they did a development, Land Rover developed a kit to fit the later gearbox straight into it. Ashcroft's sell brand new shorty, stumpy R380s, as do Winchester Gears, and what really made me go ahead with the purchase was a new or recon short R380 costs the same new as what I've paid for all this stuff. So I know
they're not cheap.
So no, they're not cheap, but that's kind
of
how I man mathsed it out.
Yeah, yeah.
And I know this is an Ashcroft's one because you can see it's cast into the bell housing, so it should all be good.
Yeah. You're in for you can have a good vehicle.
Yeah, exactly.
And that probably you'll be putting your roof tint on there then.
Yeah. I will.
That's your car for that.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, further down the line, I would like to take that apart, possibly even late next year, because the bodywork's not great on it. I mean, it's okay. It's showing its age. So I'd like to actually take it back to its original colour at some point and respray it in marine blue. But, yeah, that's in the distant future.
Right. So that you've now got yourself a keeper?
Yes, it would appear so, yeah.
Good.
But no, I'm happy with it. I really like that 110. I'm going to keep it non-power steering as well, just to keep some of the character.
Is that because your engine conversion doesn't come with a power steering?
No, it does come with it.
Does it?
Yeah.
Change it.
It doesn't come with a box. It comes with a pump. So I'd have to find a box.
I would change it.
I don't mind it with no power steering.
Okay.
We'll see.
Because I've driven it far enough.
Anyway, enough of my project updates. We're onto someone else's project. You remember a little while ago you were saying about how we should do Work in Progress Revisited.
I'm keen.
Well, funny you should say that, because Bill Main got in touch. He says, "Hi, Martin and Steve. I'm responding to your ask on the podcast about those of us who have had our Land Rovers featured in the Work in Progress section. My Defender 90 build was featured in May 2023 of the magazine. It's now since been completed, and I've done everything I set out to do with it and more." He says, "I regularly compete with the Scottish Land Rover Owners Club in the 90, and I've enjoyed it so much that I went on to buy a Tomcat 88-inch V8 that I use in speed trial events and comp safari. Yes, I've been well and truly bitten by the Land Rover bug and only restrained by lack of funds, space and time." That's the trial.
Welcome to the world of Land Rover.
The three points of failure, yeah. "I have many photos of the build and the car in competition. If it's of interest, let me know. And loving the podcast, as I said..." Yes, it was my comment on Spotify. "It's like having a conversation with like-minded friends in the pub. Maybe you need to have a feature of Land Rover clubs across the UK. You can use it as an excuse for a road trip. Cheers, Bill."
Talk about pubs. I reckon we should do a pub meet.
That's a great idea.
A podcast pub meet.
An LRM pub meet.
Yeah, but a podcast one. Like a listener podcast.
Yeah. Meet. And subscriber.
Yeah.
Get everyone involved. More the merrier.
It might have to be a big pub.
I think. Do you know what I think we should do, Steve? Talk to Caffeine and Machine and have it there.
Yeah, because that's a bit of a destination for people who don't want to talk to us.
Well, no, it's got everything, hasn't it? It's got food, it's got drink, Land Rovers everywhere. They already do tea on the tailgate there, I think. So we could just take over it with LRM. I think that'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You sort something
food for thought, if anyone's interested.
Yeah,
email editorial@lrm.co.uk.
We've also had a bit more. Yeah.
Anyway, back to that. We want a feature like that, don't we?
We do, yeah. I'm going to drop in an email and we'll get that in. It's so typical of... It just shows how contagious Land Rovers are. Like, you buy one and you think, well, this is great, but I kind of fancy having a go at that, or this would suit this better.
It's a gateway to something else.
It really is a non-stop... Just a gateway into misery and expenditure.
Yeah.
Basically. But we love it, don't we?
We're proud to partner with Adrian Flux, an insurance broker that specialises in covering all types of Land Rovers, including classic, ex-military, modified and Q-plated models. Adrian Flux offers a range of optional extras to make the policy your own and can provide cover for off-roading, green laning, agreed value and build-up cover. Plus, they even offer a discount of up to 15% for Owners Club members. Simply search Adrian Flux Land Rover Insurance for more information or call them directly on 0344 728 0417 for a quote.
Sometimes.
We've had a bit more correspondence about the Discovery Sport versus Freelander 2 ongoing debate.
Yes.
Paul Irving says a couple of... episodes ago, you mentioned the pros and cons of both a Discovery Sport and a Freelander 2. He says, I've owned both and I've done about 60,000 miles plus with each. The downside of his Freelander 2 was that the Haldex failed at 50,000 miles, cost quite a bit to repair. That is quite a known fault with them. But
what do they cost?
Bell Engineering, I think it's like £500-600.
Yeah, plus fitting.
Plus fitting, and then you'd have the diff bearings done at the same time.
You're probably in for a couple of grand, aren't you?
About 1,000, maybe. I don't know. I've not looked it up. But anyway,
okay.
The trouble with that is the Haldex often gets missed on service. People sort of gloss over it, especially like less garages that don't know Land Rovers quite as well might miss it. Mm. Anyway, the main problem with the Discovery on a 18-plate Discovery Sport was obviously the reputation of the Ingenium engines, which he discussed with our tech editor, Ed Evans, and a specialist. He said they were both wary of it, but it did hold together for 60,000 miles, which is pretty good going for an Ingenium. He's since sold both, and now he has a Defender TDCi. That was Paul. So, yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah, I mean, any vehicle, regardless of whether it's a Land Rover or not, is going to have... inherent issues. That's just the nature of the beast, really. But it's you know, he doesn't seem to really prefer one over the other in, you know, specific ways. But
yeah, and then to go to a TDCi Defender, that's kind of like completely different vehicle type, isn't it? Like in style of driving and everything, road manners.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I mean, the Defender's a much more agricultural thing than they're much more car-like, aren't they? Disco Sport and Freelander 2. So, yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool that he's had both. I still think, for me, Freelander 2 just gets it.
Yeah.
Another listener, Rob Clark, spoke about, when we were talking about the people going back to more simple vehicles.
Which we talk about all the time.
We do. It's because we get quite a lot of correspondence about it. He says, hi, Martin and Steve. Love the podcast. I've been listening from the very beginning. Look forward to your chat every week. Cheers, Rob. He says, just listening to last week's one, reference your listener frustration with modern cars. I couldn't agree more. I retired earlier this year and I've replaced my eye-wateringly expensive to maintain Audi with a 2004 Defender 90. It's an XS spec, so has all the creature comforts we've got used to. I bought it last year and I've carried out a complete strip and rebuild, including upgrading it with sound deadening, touchscreen radio, etc., without spending all the big bucks that you see with a lot of money, no object. Gin palaces, that's a great term that you see out there. I couldn't be happier with it. I've done over 6,000 miles since April. It's a proper daily driver. It's really helpful if you can do all your own maintenance and have the space. But if you have, yeah, it's a no-brainer to own it. And every trip feels like an adventure. Cheers, Rob. I completely agree.
Yeah, you'll find that when you've got your 110 done.
This is it.
It's kind of everything you need.
I'm kind of thinking the Freelander might become my wife's daily driver, or a Freelander, and I might just daily the 110.
Might treat it to a new turbo, eh?
Doesn't need one yet. I've got TDI to fit, Steve. I can't daily, deal with the turbo.
Yeah. No, I think so. I mean, I only live 2 or 3 miles away from work, so I often come here in a TD590, but I would happily drive that 15, 20, 30 miles a day.
Yeah, definitely.
All day, every day.
Defenders are all I drove from 17 to 21 or 22. I had a TDI, yeah. Then a 19J powered 110, then a TD590, which I loved.
Because even like a short run, it doesn't matter because you're not blocking up DPFs or...
No, you're not. But diesels, obviously, they prefer a longer run. The only downside is, of course, in winter, they don't get up to temperature very quickly.
That gets a nice long run a lot. Yeah. So it's not like I'm going short runs day in, day out. It gets mostly longer runs.
That's good. It does. They do enjoy a good long blast.
I really enjoy driving my TD5. Like, I really enjoy it.
I think if I could have one Land Rover to last, to do everything, and there wasn't potentially such a risk of it going missing. I know I use quite good security on all my Land Rovers anyway. I've never felt more at home driving a single vehicle than my TD590. That's what suited me best and what I liked best.
Yes. Yeah.
And although I fly the flag for TDI power, there is a lot to be said for a TD5, I have to say. And the overall package, TD590, like county station wagon or a nice hardtop like your one, I think you can't really go far wrong.
No, they're brilliant. Long live the TD5.
Yeah.
You know your 4x4. You've chosen every upgrade, every bolt-on with purpose. So when it comes to tyres, chunkier, wider, more capable for the conditions, you want the perfect fit. Not just any tyre, your tyre. That's why you'll choose 4x4tyres.co.uk, the wheel and tyre specialists, trusted by Land Rover owners and serious off-roaders alike. Whether you're upsizing, overlanding, making your Defender look the part, or your Discovery turn heads, we'll guide you to the right set. With over 800 fitting locations across the UK, from online to on-road, we've got you covered. Browse by vehicle, wheel size or brand. 4x4tyres.co.uk. The right fit, the right place, the right price.
Have you got any project updates before we move on to another listener has got in touch? Very busy times on the
feedback, isn't it?
It's very good.
Yeah. I wonder if it's because we're heading out of summer.
I don't know.
People got more time to... Not possibly. Out and about. Who knows? But project updates. I've got the...
Oh, you've T-washed your galv bits, haven't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, so the T-wash... Yeah, because I'm taking the doors... In fact, I was supposed to drop them in yesterday, but I haven't yet. So you're taking the doors for paint now, ready. I haven't worked out how to get the tub there. You need to hide. This is not. It's a nightmare. The rear tubs are actually quite big.
They're bulky, aren't they?
So you need like a high top van.
Yeah.
To get it in on the end.
What my advice would be: don't drive 3.5 hours with a van that isn't big enough to pick a tub up. Ask me how I know.
Ah.
Yeah, it wasn't great.
Yeah, they're a lot bigger than you think, even a 90 tub. So I have to hire a van for a 3-mile journey.
We could.
So annoying.
Upend it in the back of my 109 pickup and put straps over it.
Will it go in there?
It'll physically go in there, I think. It's whether it'll get marks and stuff, because it's a pickup, isn't it?
Yeah, but
I reckon if we stood it on its front edge in the tub between the wheel arch boxes, I reckon it would measure it tonight and I'll measure the bed and it might go in.
Oh, yeah, that's a good idea.
With lots of carpet to protect
it. Yeah, off cut. Yeah, no. That's...
I don't think I'd be happy to bring it back once it's painted.
No, but then at least if I'm hiring a van just for one journey,
yeah,
it's different to hiring it. Yeah, anyway. Project updates. I have been tinkering along with a few bits and pieces. I'm looking at the rear door situation at the moment.
Ah, yes. You've got a side hinging tailgate, haven't you?
Yes, I have. With a Mantec, you know, the Mantec wheel...
The spare wheel carrier.
Spare wheel carrier, which is essentially the OEM one that Land Rover had.
Yes.
Problem with that is I'm really loathed to have to drill into the top capping.
Yeah.
You have to drill into that, which is why I may change it
to an ORE one.
Because the ORE is straight off the cross member, it mounts on the door with the plate, and you don't have to drill into the new rear body.
Yes,
I'm really kind of reluctant to drill into that, and I need a spare wheel on the back because is almost the look as well, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it would look as good without one on the back.
Because I've got a side-opening tailgate, so the tailgates of a drop-down truck cab look better than what is essentially is a remanufactured from SP4x4.
Yes.
Rear half door.
Yes.
So the half door of a station wagon is obviously, it's got the glass, isn't it? These aren't just a drop-down version. They're remanufactured, so the door handle is slightly lower.
Right.
Everything changes.
That is the trouble with aftermarket bits in general.
And then you have to drill a few mil further down for the latch into the tub again.
Yes.
So only a couple of extra holes.
It's all a knock-on effect, isn't it?
Yes. Although this is quite a modified Land Rover, it's kind of like, I don't want to drill holes in a new tub.
I know what you mean. Yeah, it's a tricky one, isn't it?
Although we will be drilling holes for the new tub because I forgot I'd even ordered it and got it, but I've got the bulkhead removal bar to fit.
Yes.
Which is obviously because I've removed the bulkhead, so I can put the seats back because it's going to be that soft top. Yeah, it's not going to be a commercial vehicle, so I don't need the bulkhead.
You would be, I think, yeah, getting rid of the bulkhead was definitely the right
decision. Yeah, I could put the seat back a little bit further.
Yeah.
But yeah, just generally, I've been messing about in the garage, just sorting bits out.
Yeah.
And then just kind of working out what I need to do next. And by the time you go down a rabbit hole, you go onto Google, don't you, for parts, and you go down a rabbit hole of looking for bits, and before you know it, you just... Ugh.
It's an incredibly time-consuming
task.
When I do...
More than doing the actual work.
A lot of the time, it is, yeah. I mean, when I do the tech pieces for... Obviously, I was tech editor for LRO for a number of years, and then I moved on to LRM, but still having a hand in the tech section and writing how-to guides, it takes... You wouldn't believe the time it takes to figure out which part number relates to what age of vehicle, the price. Yep. You want to quote the prices from a company that sells everything so you don't have to break it all up.
Yeah.
It is really time consuming.
Then the part's been superseded to something else.
Yeah, that's it.
And then all of a sudden, I don't mind doing it in the evenings. I've got a genuine parts book. And then
but before you know it, hours have gone by.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and you've got about 500 tabs open on your phone.
Yeah, that's it.
Plus references.
I have to scroll back through all my open tabs on my mobile, on my iPhone, and you know, I did that job ages ago. Cancel them all. Oh, don't need that anymore. Cancel, cancel, cancel. But there's so many.
The other night, I was looking through the latest Britpart catalogue, which incidentally, you can just order and get one sent, or you can download it.
Yes, indeed.
So you can go onto Britpart's website and you can download it there, or you can request to have a hard copy sent.
Yes.
Really, really nice thing. Don't look at it on payday.
No.
I was looking at it. You know, do you remember back in the day when you were a kid and you were looking in the Argos catalogue?
Circling things you wanted for Christmas.
Yeah, we'd leave it open.
Leaving it open. Yeah, definitely.
I was like, wow, you could spend some serious money in there.
Mm.
But it's all the goodies, all the bits that you want.
I often use the Britpart website to, if I've got a part number I'm not 100% sure on, I always bash it into the Britpart search function and just double check that that's what it is.
And then you get nice pictures that show you what it is.
Exactly. And the years, it's so comprehensive. But no, having a proper catalogue is like almost like a forgotten treat, isn't it? Like you say, the Argos catalogue, no one actually has an Argos catalogue anymore. I don't even know if they still do it. But a Britpart catalogue, especially like the quality of it, is just beautiful.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Yeah, really, really cool thing.
Shall we have another listener's Well, I suppose, is this a question? Yes, it is a question. Alistair Reed gets in touch all the way from Australia. He says, loving your work, eagerly await your weekly podcasts. Cheers, Alistair. He says, I'm in Brisbane and I have a 90 and a 110 300 TDI. And I agree with you that they're the best for overlanding and general use. I've spent a while thinking about what to upgrade it to, but I can't think of anything that works as easily and reliably in remote areas as the 300 TDI. He says, I'm currently planning a six-week, 10,000-kilometre trip across Australia to visit the famous Canning Stock Route and the Simpson Desert. That sounds like it's going to be awesome.
Mm.
I've also purchased a new rooftop tent, and this is a new experience to me as I also have a camper trailer, which we used behind the 90 for 8 months during our tour around Australia. Wow, he's done some travelling.
What a trip.
That sounds amazing. So I'm really looking forward to the ease of setting up camp with a rooftop tent. My question is... Oh, Colin's not going to be happy. I run BF Goodrich All Terrains in 235, 85, 16 on my 110, standard size.
Perfect.
But I need new ones and I can't decide between the same or 265, 75, so a little bit wider. These will be working in soft sand and a lot of corrugations and dirt roads at 60 miles an hour. The car is normally loaded up with two tanks of diesel, totaling 200 litres and 60 litres of water, food, and along with essentials such as wine and beer. Which size would you go for and why? P.S. When are you coming to Australia? I can lend you a Land Rover for the trip for a trip to Fraser Island or to Moreton Island. You won't be disappointed. Thanks.
Takes about 24 hours to get there, so about this one tomorrow.
Yeah, see you tomorrow.
Yeah.
And he sent some pictures of his very cool 110 with the roof tent in place and his 90, which was featured in LRO in the early 2000s. I think it might have been 2004. And it used to have 36-inch Cymex on it and a winch when it lived in the UK. Fun fact for you.
That looks... That I would have to say, they both look amazing.
It's Monte Carlo blue and it's got a big ARB bumper on it.
Yeah.
Anyone who's familiar with mags from around that time will no doubt remember it.
Absolutely. The 110 looks awesome.
Does, doesn't it? It's like Coniston Green with a few little accents.
Yeah.
Raised air intake, big bull bar on it again. Very cool.
I now want to see pictures of the camping trailer as well.
Well, there you go, Alistair, if you hear this.
Yes.
Please, for attention of Steve, camping trailer pictures.
Please.
In answer to your question, tyre size. Personally, having played with both, I would stick with 235-85.
Why did you answer that? Because in my mind, I have the same answer.
So
I don't really know why.
Because it's a standard size.
Yes.
There's more variety. They're probably easier to get hold of if you do have a problem further out in, you know, in the bush. And everything is just under that little bit less strain with a slightly narrower tyre.
I prefer the look of a 235-85.
Really?
Mm.
Interesting.
I'm not keen on really mad wide tyres.
The 260, this is the other thing.
They're not actually wider, are they?
265s are wider.
They're 30 mil. They're 30 mil wider, but it's the profile, isn't it, of the...
Yeah, so a 235-85 is narrower but has a taller sidewall.
Yeah.
Well, so it doesn't have a taller sidewall because it's done...
Percentage of. Yeah.
So yeah. 265 is 30 mil wider.
Colin's not going to be happy.
I know.
I don't even know who Colin is.
Sorry, Colin. He doesn't like us talking about tyres.
Okay, just gloss over this bit.
Yeah, fast forward a little bit longer.
Keep going.
But it's a 265-75.
Colin's still here.
Oh, he's still listening.
He is.
So they're actually, I think from memory, the 265 is a whisker smaller diameter, but not enough to make a difference. But it's also, I would argue, not wider enough to make a difference on stuff like sand. So I would just let a few more PSI out of your standard size ones and run that.
Yeah.
Less drag on driveline, better fuel economy, probably slightly brisker acceleration, although you're not really going to notice it. And easier to get hold of. My money is stick on 235-85. Land Rover knew what they were doing when they fitted them.
There you go.
Yeah,
I think that's a brilliant answer.
Thanks. If you want more tyre content, we did two episodes with Dave Deneen from Southam Tyres and Chris from 4x4 Tyres a few episodes ago, so check them out. In fact, if you're new to the podcast, welcome along. We never say this, do we?
No, and those who do listen... Thank you.
Yeah, thank you ever so much.
Because we're getting a lot of feedback. Feedback.
Yeah, it's great. And it's brilliant to hear people's experiences, questions and all that stuff. We absolutely love to get your correspondence. And if you want to drop us an email, editorial@lrm.co.uk. We would love to answer your question. No, all good fun. All good fun indeed. Ah, so my friends are members of a auction website. It's like salvage auction, you know, like Copart and Cinetic and things like that. They right, do like okay. damaged and crashed vehicles. There is currently a Tambora Flame i6 Freelander 2 for sale on one of these salvage auction websites. It's listed as a non-runner, but it doesn't appear to be damaged. It's got usual marks and things like that. But it's also, interestingly, a VX registration plate. So it's an X factory, really early launch colour petrol Freelander 2, which is almost like the holy grail of that car, if you like.
So when are you buying it?
Well, I can't now because I bought the TDI instead. But
yeah,
if anyone's listening that's into early pre-production or early production Freelander 2s, be sure to check it out. I'm pretty sure it's on Cinetic. Just Google it and it will come up. But it's a VX reg as well. As soon as I saw that.
How much are you up for? Is it auction? Yeah.
It's on bids. Yeah. It's not up for very much at all.
Not many people will possibly know what that is.
Well, not many people, I don't think, who frequent that website will think. Will think
what
much
I want
of
in
it
my life as a non-runner.
Is a slightly ratty non-runner petrol Freelander 2.
Yeah.
But to the right person, that's probably quite a cool restoration, recommission type jobby. So yeah, check that out. It really caught my eye and I have to say I was tempted. But I did refrain because, yeah, I've already...
You can't buy them all.
You can't save them all, sadly. But yes, going on to, we spoke a little while ago, a couple of weeks ago, about the Anglia Car Auctions sale, didn't we?
We did. And have they had that sale?
They have had the sale. And
did we
let
not
me
like,
tell
have
you,
a bet on like prices?
We
I
might
can't
have
remember.
Done.
I can't remember what we said, though.
Some interesting results, Steve. There is, I don't believe this one was on the website when we did our little preview, but 1970 Land Rover Series 2A, short wheelbase, with a full tilt. The estimate was £6,000 to £7,000. Would you like to guess what that made?
£9,500.
£12,096 plus fees. That really must have caught someone's eye. And on the flip side to that, the long wheelbase Series 1 pickup, which I quite like the look of.
Oh, yeah.
Estimated at £6,000 to £7,000, only made £4,320.
That's really interesting, isn't it?
Isn't it unusual?
Yeah, but you see, that's... The other one looks Instagram cool. That one probably is slightly...
It's a bit more of an acquired taste.
An acquired taste, yeah.
But it does go
to show... A niche within a niche.
Yes. Are Series 1s starting to come down in price? I mean, we've sort of noticed one or two.
I've noticed some of the prices have come right down, which is only a good thing because I think it...
Well, it encourages people to use them properly, doesn't it?
Yeah, and not being too scared to use them and falls into the realms of, you know, within reach of the enthusiast.
Yeah, definitely. So, changing gear slightly, do you remember the Range Rover Sport SDV6 that had done just 9,078 miles?
I do remember it.
Would you like to hazard a guess, estimate 13 to 18, what that made? This 2013 Range Rover Sport autobiography with just 9,000 miles on the clock.
£22,000.
You're pretty close. £27,000.
Whoa.
Plus fees. By the time
that's 30 grand car.
30 grand. But if you want, you know, that's one of the last of that shape. Top spec. No mileage at all.
No, that's nothing.
That's kind of, it could be a savvy buy as a modern classic. Like,
yeah.
Or maybe whoever bought it just really likes that shape sport and they thought, I'm never going to find another one as good as this. I'll have it. So, moving on, the slight bone of contention that we sort of raised.
Hang on, is that a bell I can hear ringing?
Well, it's either a bell or a phone. But we sort of maybe picked on this.
We did. We did. It just didn't look right.
It did garner some attention from our listeners and fellow auction catalogue pervs. But it did in fact sell, and I'm frantically scrolling trying to find what it went for. So essentially, this was a 90, but it was listed as not a 90, wasn't it? You may recall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I can't remember. It was a couple of weeks ago we looked through this.
It was, yeah. Oh, as I scroll past, the Series 1 short wheelbase pickup, which I also like the look of, which was an estimate of 6 to 7, remains available. So I don't know if that was didn't hit reserve or what, but
Yeah.
Yeah, some people put vehicles in, not saying this is the case here, but unrealistic expectations. The best time to sell something is the very first time it hits the market.
Yeah.
So second time around, you probably won't get more.
And people wonder why it's for sale again a lot of the time.
Yeah. People who are in the market for it the first time around, ultimately, what is that?
Have you seen that? So this again was entered into the sale after we'd done our sort of preview.
It looks like it's a sandcastle under it.
A what?
It looks like a sandcastle. From the brief split second you showed me a picture.
So this is a Series 2A 109, but it's got all the sort of UN, not UN, the bomb disposal sort of skirts on it. This intriguing Series 2A 109 is accompanied by a heritage certificate showing it was built in July 1969 in RAF blue and dispatched to the Central Army Vehicle Depot. Since then, it's acquired armoured anti-riot bodywork and a Series 3 dashboard and re-registered in 1981.
There's a few towns in England that you need that.
No comment. It comes to us directly from a film company. Pretty cool thing. No reserve. It made 5,292.
Let's have a look at that picture again that you showed me. Do you see what I mean? Like, briefly,
yeah,
it looks like...
It becomes the ground almost,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it's weird.
But it's all right geared up. Pretty cool thing. Deviating from Land Rovers slightly. Don't stone me to death. 1980 Land Cruiser, Trayback. Only made 13.5. I thought that would have made far more.
Mm.
But then I don't know tons
about...
Well,
if you're into Land Cruisers, yeah.
Yes, indeed. The 2013 Defender 110 that we had a bit of a bet on, I thought would do sort of 12-ish. This was a 2013 Puma Utility. 8.856.
That's a bit of a bargain,
I think. It is, definitely.
That's not bad.
L322, Vogue, TDV8. Estimate was 3-5, and it made just over 3 at 3,132. Someone probably got quite a tidy car for that, actually.
Yeah. Anyway, where's this ringer? I mean, this 90...
I have located it. Okay. And in credit... To because it didn't have a description on it when we first looked, did it? It said details to follow or something.
Yeah.
So, are you ready for the ACA description? This Land Rover 90 is rather like Trigger's broom, a phrase we're all too familiar with. Although registered in 1971, the chassis number dates from 1961, and to all intents and purposes, we're offering a 1980/90s Land Rover 90 body on a replacement 90 galvanised chassis fitted with a 300 TDI. Some years ago, DVLA rules on modified Land Rovers were less enforced than they are now, and this vehicle appears to be a product of this time. In the current ownership since 2009, it's been used on private land since 2018, and we would suggest that to avoid any future issues with the DVLA, this vehicle is best suited to continued use on private land and not used for road use. That sounds like a lot of backside covering to me.
However, it is.
It made £4,968.
It probably had a really nice lower dash.
Yeah, Steve's mission for a lower dashboard continues.
Do you know what, right? They are not coming up. Please, if anyone has a lower... I shouldn't say this because everyone's going to try and obtain lots of money, but there are no Defender lower dashes for sale.
Weird, isn't it?
Mm.
So that's your ACA auction roundup. There were a couple of others in there, but we haven't got time to. We won't be yapping about auctions all day. But
no, because it's almost as bad as talking about buying Land Rovers. It's about as bad as talking about tyres.
Yeah. But yes, Steam Rally this weekend. I lied about it the last time and said it was the weekend before, but actually it is this weekend, as well as, of course, Beaver Land Rover Show, which I will pop to.
Mm, yeah, I'm going to go along.
Yeah.
On Saturday.
Yeah, I'll probably go Saturday, I think. If you're listening to this when it comes out, obviously it will have been and gone. But yeah, see what's going on, see what's about. It's kind of local. There'll be Land Rovers there. So what's not to like?
Well, no.
I mean, the parking charge. I don't like the parking charge, but I like the show.
No, the show's okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's all right.
Yeah. So probably see you there. I'll have a pocket full of stickers.
I've still got all the stickers. At mine.
Have you? Well, you take them too and we can dish them out.
Yeah, we
spread
can.
Spread the good word of LRM podcast. So, yeah, all good. All good fun. Been quite a busy week, I'm not going to lie. I know I had 4 days off, but I've been busy doing other stuff.
Yeah, you did, because this is weird. What even day is it?
What day is it today?
It's Tuesday.
It's Tuesday.
Yeah.
We never record on a Tuesday. We sometimes record on a Tuesday.
So hang on, this is on a Tuesday.
But it doesn't go out till next Wednesday.
Oh, okay. So we're well ahead. We're getting ahead of the game here.
We are. Well, the thing is, I'm actually going on holiday soon. I'm actually having some actual time off. So we need to sort of get these podcasts stashed away.
So that we can continue with one a week.
Yes, that's the aim. I'm not promising anything. I wouldn't like to break the role that we've got going because this is like
16 months in, is it?
I don't even know. It all becomes a blur.
Yeah, no, we've managed it so far. But let's go to show you haven't had a holiday for like over a year.
Mate, no, I haven't. Because we moved house last year, we didn't go away anywhere.
Then that's right.
Most of my holiday was used up on, you know, errands and stuff like that. But I've never been more ready to go and go somewhere sunny.
You need escapism from working with me.
No comment.
That is exactly what it is.
But no, I will do my very best. What I really need to do is teach you how to edit them so that I don't have to edit every single week and we can take turns.
Yeah.
I haven't got time for that. I can hear it already.
Sounds like a right hassle to me.
It's not that bad.
No. Anyway, we'll edit the bit where you talked about like the colour, the launch. What was it? I can't remember. The i6, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Freelander.
Yeah.
There has been about a 5-minute break in this podcast that will be edited out.
5 minutes is a slight exaggeration there, Steve. What I would say is I'm pretty hot. People have probably noticed I take quite an interest in Land Rover colours, especially when they do something a bit outlandish like Kalima Lime, Barley Blue, even the earlier stuff, Maasai Red, real rich,
vibrant.
What is
the best colour ever made on a Land Rover?
Ooh, you've opened up a can of worms there. Because different colours, they look better on certain body styles than others, don't they?
Yeah, they do.
Land Rover got really sort of paint gun trigger happy with like the Freelander 2, Range Rover Sport, Discovery 4, Discovery 3. A lot of them shared a lot of colours.
Yeah.
Personal favourite of mine, actually. Range Rover Sport and Discovery, Bourneville, which looks brown in some lights and is a really vivid purpley like.
Oh, a bit like my colour reveal there.
Sort of, yeah, but nicer.
Yeah, that's not hard. Well, I'm committed, Dame.
I know you have, yeah.
Talking about Land Rover colours, yesterday I was out towards Stony Stratford area of Milton Keynes.
Okay.
And I went...
Oh, that's our friend Ian stomping round.
Ian
Arthur.
Yeah, I wasn't
He
wasn't far from.
He should have popped in for a cup of tea.
Yeah, but, you know.
He could have kicked the tyres on his Land Rover.
Probably getting his Monza ready. His Vauxhall Monza.
I believe the Monza.
Opel Monza.
Oh, that's what I was going to...
Is it Vauxhall?
I don't know.
Opel Monza.
It's a cool car, though. Really cool.
Yeah, anyway, that. It's just come back from paint. And he put a post up saying he's got 19 days.
He's got to take it to France, hasn't he?
Build it. Don't laugh. I'm like, that looks like about 19 years worth of work.
Yeah.
If I was doing it, obviously.
Sorry,
anyway,
I interrupted.
Yeah, I went past Urban Automotives, one of their dealerships. They've got a dealership out Stony Stratford-y type way.
Right.
Milton Keynes, Buckinghamshire.
Okay.
And there was a complete row of Defenders out the front, all black. Looked really boring. I have to say, I know black new Defenders look cool.
Oh, new shape.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But it was like, where's the variety?
I guess...
They're all like the same colours, aren't they?
When you're doing mods... In the ilk that they do, black probably is one of the more desirable colours.
I just found it a bit kind of like.
I know what you
where's
mean.
Where's the individuality then if they all look the same?
Yes.
I only went past briefly. I didn't stop or slow down. I was doing 30 miles an hour through the village. I just went, there's Open Automotive, their dealership.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, most of the modified new Defenders you see that are done in like a street style, like bigger wheels and the pods on the roof and the.
Yeah,
they're normally black, aren't they? Like the majority of them. So I guess they're gonna put out what colour they deem
wants.
What customers are gonna, you know, ask for the most. And if that's black, then you can't really blame them. But
no, I don't blame them. I just thought
I'd like a Sedona Red. Oh, Sedona Red new Defender with some mods. Oh,
yeah, just subtle.
That would look cool. Or actually, even better than that. Sargasso Blue, the new Octa colour, which is just amazing.
You saw that at Goodwood, didn't you?
Full report coming in the next issue. Little preview for
you. Is that on sale now?
No, not yet. But or will it be?
Hang on.
It will be. There's a new issue of Land Rover Monthly on sale. Today, which you can see.
But not today. It is today.
Yeah. The day you're listening.
Yeah. I've seen it. I've seen the mag. I've seen the mag just now.
It's a thing of beauty, isn't it?
It's off the press.
Not only do you get a copy of Land Rover Monthly, you also get our Glovebox Guide to Adventure, which is 32 pages of adventures to inspire you to get out there and do some exploring in your Land Rover.
If you've run out of time this year, the adventures don't go because you can use them next year.
Exactly.
Stick it in your glove box. That's what it's designed to do.
Yeah, really, really cool thing. I'm very, very pleased with this issue. Do you know what? Actually, we'll go into more depth with Feature of the Week, etc. next week because I'm aware that we are running out of time. This issue spans every year, pretty much, or every era from Series 1s all the way through to the latest Defender.
Oh, nice.
It's really, really good. It's, yeah. Not to blow my own trumpet, but please do pick up Land Rover Monthly. And if you want it delivered to your door every month, because why wouldn't you, subscribe.
And save money.
And save money and get it earlier. But yeah, one last question, actually, before we go. Mentioned Ian, our friend Ian Arthur. I actually submitted a question to his podcast because I thought, you know, we get loads of questions on ours. I want to pay that forward. So I did. And I asked to his podcast, which he does with Tim, A Pint of Petrol. Check it out. It's quite good. What's the most over and underrated classic car to drive? Because I had a go in a Mini Cooper, an original Mini Cooper once, years ago, after hearing nothing but good things about it, and I had a go in it, and I couldn't get along with it. I thought it was the most... It did not live up to the hype. It did not live up to the hype at all.
Thing is, I always think, for me, MG BGT.
Is that overrated?
Yes.
Okay.
I owned one because I had to scratch the itch. I've never driven a more underpowered, thirsty car. It did like 20 miles to the gallon, and it could barely, it wouldn't, the old saying is, wouldn't pull the skin off a rice pudding.
Yeah.
And but I have heard, and I have spoken to people since, if you modify them in the right way, you can get them to be a right driver's car.
Like rip that stupid B series out and put a V8 in.
Shut the boat anchor engine in a bin. Stick a
nice light 3.5 hot cam.
No, apparently V8s make them drive not that great.
Really?
Even though the factory MG did it at the factory.
Yeah.
Really, probably the best thing is a twin cam.
Oh, like MX5.
Mazda MX5 engine.
Yeah.
And a 5-speed box.
Yeah, it's
to
a good
basically
shout.
Make it. Drive like an MX-5, but look like an MGB.
I get it.
Anyway, before we turn this into MGB monthly.
Yeah.
That was my overrated, but I still like them.
Yeah.
I would have another one.
I was at a petrol station the other day in an absolutely gorgeous MGB. It was in like a sage green, had the Sebring kit, but it was blended in, wide arches.
Yeah, oh, lovely.
Had four like rally lights on the front, and I don't know what was, had a roll cage as well. Don't know what was under the bonnet. I was really wanted to chat to the owner, but I couldn't. He must have been in the garage or whatever, and I did pay at pump. What a thing. Wide like mini lights on it.
Fantastic. Oh. Fantastic looking thing.
Yeah.
What would let that down is if it had the original engine.
Looking at the rest of it, I would be very surprised if it did. But yeah.
Mm.
But
bizarrely though, there's people out there that have never driven a Land Rover, probably not listening to this podcast, who find Defenders and Series the most overrated thing in the land.
This is it, you see. It's all right, subjective. It's also,
I should imagine a VW Beetle would be horrendous.
I'd like a go in one.
Yeah, but I see... Yeah, I used to live in Poddington, which is the village next to Santapod, where the drag racing is. And they used to have bug jams. Regularly, I'd drive along in my Discovery 300 TDI, and I would see, like, around the area, loads broken down with the AA attending or the RAC, just broken down. And just, in my mind, they're just junk.
Well... Yeah, the radiator won't have split, will it?
No, not on the end. Well, that's why, because it was always summertime and it was all overheat and just...
I mean, I think we're probably in danger of throwing stones in glass houses by saying there's lots of cars broken down after shows because you're all over the A1 as Land Rovers, isn't there, normally?
Whenever you do a Land Rover show, you know we put posts on Facebook about Land Rover show at Newbury or whatever?
Yeah, sure.
It's always, always. I can bet a month's salary.
Yeah.
someone will go, oh, but the AA is going to be busy. Every breakdown truck in the area needs to attend.
You can set your watch to it, can't
you? Always someone that puts that comment.
Yeah.
And it's quite like,
yeah.
Not heard that one before.
Exactly, yeah. Great. Anyway, that's quite enough of that. So, yes, please do send any ratings, reviews, feedback, questions, whatever you like. Make them on your preferred streaming platform.
Congratulate you for choosing the correct engine.
Give me a virtual pat on the back for buying a TDI.
Thank goodness. I'm glad.
Yes, editorial at lrm.co.uk. Send us your questions over. We love to get them. If we haven't read yours out yet, don't worry. We are getting to it. We do get quite a few, which is lovely. We absolutely love to get them. Check us out on Instagram, Land Rover Monthly, Land Rover Martin, Steve Miller Automotive. Facebook, give us a follow. Sign up for the newsletter. It's free.
Yeah.
Like this podcast. Free. YouTube channel, also free. But please do buy the magazine, because that helps us.
Which isn't free.
It's not free, but it is flipping brilliant.
And great value for money.
Exactly.
On that bombshell, let's get out of here.
Yeah, let's do one. So, thanks as always for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye for now.